Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is a podcast in partnership with Sowetan Live. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. South Africa is alive with possibilities. I mean, who would have imagined a former president in jail? A sitting president sleeping on cash, literally. A cabinet minister visiting a common prisoner in jail. Or even the post office operating, even when they have nothing to do.
Can you confirm that delivery performances dropped?
Welcome to the new Sowetan Live podcast called Taking the Rams by the Horns with me, Rams Mabote. Each week, I will be taking a lighter look at very serious topics that half the time drive you up the wall. This podcast will use humor to take no prisoners, have no holy cows, and cook a whole lot of sacrificial lambs.
This is what I'm saying to the girls that are being raped, GBV, all sorts of crime being done to you. We're going to make sure that every girl child must get a gun license. I'm telling you, we're going to shoot their balls. They behave like animals. We are going to treat them like animals. Enough is enough. I will not send my daughter out there without a gun because the likes of the alleged rapists are walking around wielding power without being accountable, and they are being praised everywhere. Alleged rapists. We should have shot his balls, and we are going to do it.
And on that note, Colleen Makubela announced her intentions to go to the Union Buildings as the president, or shall I say the next president, of the Republic of South Africa after May 29. Yay! Faggy safety fail to win. But more than just the promise to arm the girls to shoot the hell out of all the bad men out there, the South African Rainbow Alliance, SARA, has launched its own manifesto dissing the other parties that filled up bigger venues. And today, Ms. Makubela, the executive president of SARA, is here to speak for herself and her party and convince you why you should make your mark on SARA come May 29 this year. But before we get into the discussion, with the president in waiting, let me remind those of you who have been sleeping and have no clue who Colleen Makubela is. Until recently, she was speaker of the City of Johannesburg Metro, and damn did she speak. This was rather a powerful position for the sole representative of the Congress of the People in the council. But party leader Musiwa Lekota could not cope with her and fired her from the party. She's highly qualified, is a member of the Institute for Directors of South Africa, has served as both chairperson and non-executive director for the South African Post Office, and she currently serves as a trustee for several organizations. And she's now here as our guest. Avjin.
Ahe.
Minjan.
Efukile Minjan.
Ikon. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
You're the second politician I'm hosting leading to May 29, so you've done well.
And, wow, thank
and
you.
As you know, the only female I'll host, right? Because
yes.
All of them are male.
Yeah.
You are spoiling the party for males.
No, in fact, not even spoiling the party. We really want to stop that party.
Yes.
For males. And I'm grateful that you invited me. I've been complaining to many of these editors and of newsrooms, etc.
Yeah.
Why are they not paying attention to the female-led party? They don't come to our manifesto. Only SABC shows up. When you've got Mashaba, whether it's talking nonsense or not, they are blasting it live, irritating us the whole day.
Yeah.
You've got others, Bosa's Rise, you know, really not taking anything, but they are live throughout the whole day. With us, you hardly find us in our manifesto. And
yes.
You filled a stadium, by the way, not a hall.
I saw that.
We didn't have 2,000 people in a hall. We had thousands of people in a stadium.
Yes.
Where it met us in the villages. People came in their numbers. But South Africa is not interested. So, yeah.
Well, I know you know the phrase subconscious bias. And that's what's happening, right? I mean, we do things because we always gravitate to the same things that we've always done.
Well, yeah, and it happens not just in media space, but funding too.
Yeah.
Where we find it difficult to raise money as SARA, because I must explain 70 times who I am and, you know, bring this, bring that. You saw Jordan, what is his name? The one who pulled off Jardine.
Before
he even stepped foot in any leadership position politically, he came with a bag of millions, hundreds of millions.
Well, he worked for a bank. You should have started there.
Still, too. You work for a bank. It doesn't mean you're a good politician. How do they know? How do they bank so much on a man who's never been tried and tested in a political position? Look what happened. A flop of note. But for me, who's been in a political position, I've proven myself over. My qualifications are there. The experience is there. I'm finding it difficult to raise just the same amount of 15 million that rises as raised journalist to politician. But because, and you can't ignore the...
You also worked in the bank. But let's get to our conversation. By the way, do you miss being Speaker of Joburg?
Well, I do. What I do miss the most is really the work that I used to do with the people. I mean, I was everywhere. You did say I did speak.
Yeah.
You know, I had the opportunity to go to the most difficult areas, respond to every crisis and opportunity that was happening in Joburg. I worked with some of the most incredible people. And I'll tell you, I do miss the blue lights and the salary too.
Do you miss the mayor, Kabelo Kwamanda?
No.
I can tell you he misses you. You know, you fill the gaps where he was not available.
They all miss me. They do call and say, we miss you. So, and I appreciate that, yeah.
But with these lawsuits that are happening, you know, about copyrights of names and stuff like that, were you not worried that some random person will say, hey, are you using my name for your political party, Sarah?
No, not really, because what we did before we registered Sarah was to check in the IP register if there's anything close to that. Even the logo.
I'm sure there are 13 million women who are called Sarah out there.
In terms of that, yes, there were plenty, but in terms of the political parties, there were none. Even the logo, if you look at our logo, it's not the typical, you know, political logo with all of those colors and struggle icon. Yeah, we stayed away from the map and all of that that could cause contention.
Sure that the Desmond Tutu Foundation don't say, oh, that was our founder who said the rainbow people of South Africa.
Yeah.
No, they won't sue you for that.
We're lucky ANC didn't claim rainbow as well. They seem to be claiming everything. COPE, MK, Heritage, Rainbow.
Don't
so
rush,
yeah.
They still be coming.
Okay.
Who is this South African Rainbow Alliance? Imali Sahara Lemlak Vote Lion. Let me tell you, Rikilibucho Risaraki in. There are too many challenges and failures for one person alone to deliver change in this nation. The failures have been too deep, and the scale of them is too wide. And that's why, as SARA, South African Rainbow Alliance, we have decided to join forces with different political parties. We've come together to form this alliance, so that we combine our strength, we combine our resources, we combine our talents, our gifts, our ideas to become the implementing agent of change in this nation. SARA is a party for everybody. It's a party that is driven by godly principles, driven by people who have a desire to serve the humankind. SARA is for blacks, is for whites, colored Indians, the educated, uneducated. SARA is for vendors, is for Tswanas, is for Shangans, is for Zulus. SARA is for all of us.
So, who is Sarah? Who is this alliance, in this alliance with you?
The alliance has changed a lot over the last 4 months. We're 4 months old, by the way. We started off... When COPE left, it was ICM, Independent Citizens Movement. NFP was part of us. We had another party that was supposed to have registered, ARM, which failed to register, so they automatically fell off. And then we had various civic organizations, etc., that were part of that. And with the passage of time, as I said, NFP managed to get their act together with IEC, so they moved out of the alliance. And then we've got ICM still part of the alliance. We've got several churches. We've got citizens, Mzansi citizens as part of the alliance. We are now getting more political parties that fell off.
Yeah.
We've got AMSA and KZN that, you know, are part of the alliance. We've got two in, one in Limpopo that we are also just still talking to finalizing. Mm-hmm. But SARA has become a political party now.
Yes.
That is not just a an alliance of minority parties anymore.
That this answers is my next question.
Yes.
Because I was going to ask, which party do you represent in SARA? Okay,
with the firing from COPE, SARA then changed shape and form. It's a political party.
Ah.
That's why we've got members, you know, and that vote for us, that I have membership forms and all of that. So effectively, it's like any other party that can enter into any alliance or partnership with whoever, you know, seems to resonate with us.
Did I hear that you are going to be candidate for both president of the country and premier of the province of Gauteng?
Yes, we've just announced today. Exciting for the Gauteng residents, especially the Joburg residents who've been crying out for that. I'm going to stand as a premier candidate for Gauteng, and I think I'll make a damn good premier too.
Almost like you're giving up on the union buildings by also putting your name for Gauteng.
Not really. And we've learned from models that worked. If you remember when Helen Ziller ran for DA presidency, she also ran as the West. We've seen even the Gating McKenzie's is also running as presidency, etc. You know, and what that does effectively, it's you take the strongest person who has the strongest presence in that province. And because the people already of Gauteng, they know me, there's a trust factor, they know what I have done. So to introduce a new candidate at this late hour into the election, you don't have time to be really convincing the public on who they are, what can they do, etc. So the leadership of SARA really felt that with my track record as the Speaker of Joburg, and of course, the qualifications and my passion, you know, for this province as well, and for the city of Joburg, which is really the one of the heartbeats of the province, I think we'll do well in Gauteng. And there's a lot that I can bring into Gauteng because I've worked very closely, you know, with the Gauteng leadership as well when I was a speaker. So I know what we need to press to make this province work. It's an economic hub of South Africa, of the continent.
Yeah.
And we cannot afford to joke around with it in terms of leadership. Disappointed, we've seen what Lusufi has done with it. He's turned it into some employment agency for fooling young people.
That's
all
not,
over the
you,
place.
You are promising people 5 million jobs in 6 months or 12 months.
No.
Is it not the same?
No, it's not the same. It's actually, we're promising them that 5 million jobs in 5 years. I think we need to correct that,
okay.
In 5 years. But we have backing for it. And we are not saying government is going to be
that.
An employer.
Because
government
we're not talking about
cannot employ.
About your strategy, your policy of care, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, yes.
In 2019, did you vote for COPE?
No, 2019, I was still ANC.
You see, when President Ramaphosa took power, he was portrayed as a businessman with pragmatic grasp of economic realities. He was portrayed by the media bringing this new dawn. But tumamina. Some of us at that time, but tumamina, we're voting for tumamina. But we were blinded.
Oh, I see. Because I heard you speak about, you know, we voted for tumamina. And like, why are you dissing this guy when you should have voted for another party? Oh, so you voted for tumamina.
Yes, and I joined COPE, I think it was 2020, just before we went into the 2021 elections. Then I ran as the mayoral candidate.
Therefore, let us get to the heart of your manifesto.
Yes.
Today, we are proud to be presenting to you what we call the SARA Gear. The SARA Gear, it stands for G, stands for growth, E is employment, A is accountable, R is redistribution. We are presenting our emergency program of action for this nation, and we have called it SARA Gear.
But before we get to Gear, right, to the content of Gear, Really? Couldn't you choose another acronym other than gay? I mean, just used before. I know that you've changed one word there, you know, but it sounds like you're repurposing or what's that word? Something without compensation?
Expropriation without compensation.
I mean, yes. You could have chosen another, you know, feminine name like Grace or even Colleen.
I think Sarah is enough. The men must also find space. So, yes. We could have, but I think it really shows our thought process of what we are trying to do. To a large extent, you cannot recreate the wheel of what works in an economic environment. The principles and the policies that really produce growth, they produce jobs, are there. Mm-hmm. ANC may choose to ignore them. Others may choose to ignore them and follow their own path of whether socialism, etc., you know. But if you really look at what worked in our country at a certain point of time, those were the policies. Had we continued with them, I think the country would have been in a different space. And I cannot claim that I'm a bright spark recreating anything. We must give credit where credit is due. GEAR worked. Yes, it needs to be repurposed given the material conditions of where we find ourselves post-COVID. We no longer have SAA. Eskom is dead. Transnet is dead. Ports are dead. I mean, you can name it. But when GEAR was done, also corruption was not at this rate where it's rampant. That's why accountable has been added to that. So it's important to take what worked, then look at how do we improve on it and give credit to what has worked. So that's where GEAR comes from. And we're not ashamed of it. We're not embarrassed about it. Those were our leaders that we had faith in. And things went terribly wrong after they left. And that's why I also joined COP, because I believed in those principles. Yeah. And yeah, so it shows the integrity and the consistency of what I'm talking about.
Now that almost confirms that what people say cynically, that there was a guy who was behind COP whose name I won't mention, but let's move on.
I know nothing about that guy.
So what do you mean about denationalizing state-owned enterprises? I mean, in English, I don't know what this denationalizing is.
In English, it means let's remove the heavy hand of state out of those entities.
Yeah.
Eskom is a nationalized entity. What has it produced? Load shedding. SAA was a nationalized entity. What did it produce? It collapsed. Transnet is a
nationalized. Before then, Eskom, there was a time for 10 years back to back, it was voted the best employer in the world. It was an amazing organization. So is it Eskom, or is it about the latest events around there?
Look, perhaps the latest events do come into play, because now that we have... we took it over 1994. It was a national asset even then. But this current national government has failed to maintain it. Yeah. The skills that were supporting Eskom, the engineers, whether it's Afrikaners or Indian, etc., they're in the heat of factional battles also of ANC. We've seen even good black engineers exit, you know, and also in the name of transformation. So to get it back to where it was, pre-94. And also, we just don't want to go to pre-94. We're saying it needs to be more...
It was good. It was still good.
It was good, but it also needs to be modernized. We have failed to even bring in the modern technology, etc., through the corruption. So right now, what will save it in the absence of money from government is privatization. It's really getting private investments in there. And you can't do that with the heavy hand of national nationalization that is happening. So for me, you look at Transnet, the same thing, right? So in order to get all of these things back on track, you need an investor that is going to invest his money, invest skills, assist us to regroup, recoup, etc. Because government cannot keep pumping money. They don't have that money. We can't keep going to the IMF and the World Bank to borrow. Our national debt is beyond reproach right now. We can't even sustain the repayments. What do we do? Denationalize, let people come and invest, let them create their jobs. We wanted to do the same thing, by the way, with a post office when I was the chairperson there. And I got fired for some of those ideas. And we had people that were keen to say, we will not retrench anybody. These are special assets as they look at them through opportunities. We've looked at them as dilapidated assets. We've closed those post offices. They looked at them as opportunities
Most remote areas where they could have used
you
for amazing
do not find
things.
A footprint like that.
Yeah.
Both internationally, we had beautiful, beautiful proposal. And these were willing to do even revenue share with government. Over and above government just really offloading the monkey, they would be getting revenue as well, which we could have used to redistribute in grants or any other thing that we chose to use it for. But no, this nationalization, this whole issue of government wanting to run things that they are not core to where they are or no longer relevant for them, it's not working for South Africa. And 700 SOEs, by the way, you know how many jobs? That's where the 5 million jobs come from. 700 SOEs.
Jobs thing. I'm still interested. Yeah. In fact, let's get to it now, because I thought it got interesting when you got to that point. I thought, could it be the heat in Malamulele, or you felt that the audience was a bit sleepy and you wanted to jolt them back to life, like 5 million jobs?
Yes.
I mean, I know somebody has promised 9 million, but I still thought 5 million was a lot. I thought, did you misquote yourself?
And it's based on sound research. It's based
Please
on
tell
sound
us
research.
About it.
If you denationalize this 700 state-owned entities, you are able to create close to 600,000 jobs per annum. You cut taxes. We are the most highly taxed nation in the world. Corporate, we can cut it back to 22%.
I heard that.
That allows the corporates to reinvest their money in. And when we cut that, there are conditions. You pay this much, but let's create jobs. Even your personal tax, we have to reduce it to about 36% because it's very high. You don't have disposable income. And if you're not spending, retailers are not creating more jobs. So it's a ripple effect of a lot of things. Then we've got the 24-hour economy.
Whoa! Let's stick first with this one.
Yes.
So, these 600,000 jobs in the SOEs, you mean they don't exist now? But they will exist now.
If
you denationalize, I'm using your
and
word
if
now.
We cut
I'm learning
taxes.
Fast. You'll see.
Yes.
Denationalize.
Yeah.
But I'm still not sure how they come about as opposed to the jobs that are already in these SOEs.
There are no jobs in the SOEs. We've retrenched. Even Eskom. If we get a private sector who's willing now to put in their money, and they're there, put in their money and modernize and turn around.
Somebody's going to take a 400 billion rand debt at Eskom. They're going to want to run that thing in their own terms, not in Sarah's terms.
No, certainly. That's what denationalization means.
Yeah.
That's what it means. It means the state will lose control. You will have a stake. But you must allow, whoever has the money to put in there must be allowed the space to run it and to be profitable. And once it's profitable, just with Eskom alone, you know how many industries were able to revive in South Africa that have closed because
Look,
of the energy?
I know the value chain is big. And
it's huge.
It
just
big.
By ports alone.
Yep.
Ports alone. We used to be one of the top 10 ports in the world. We are now 351st in the world. Nobody's bringing stuff through our ports. Nobody wants to wait 3-4 days of demurrage costs and all of that nonsense and inefficiencies that are happening there. So just by fixing that alone, we can bring back the traffic that has gone to other countries. You know, even Kenya is taking even our countries and other African...
I'm told Mozambique is smiling.
Certainly. Like, what happened to those jobs? We are not doing those calculations. The tracking, what happened to those jobs? The rail jobs, half, even 80% of our rail is dead. Ask about what happened to those jobs. So when we start to do this, post office is retrenching almost 60,000.
We're just waiting to lay the wreath on the post office, right? I mean,
SAA, how many did they retrench?
Yeah.
You know, Dinel, how many did they retrench? You can go on and on and on all of this. Just by denationalization, getting private sector, etc., you are recouping those jobs back. You are also creating more. And cutting taxes on some of the factories, etc., creating energy, but you don't want me to go to the 24-hour economy,
I'm going to go to the tax. But you know, my fear about the job promise is that even the governing party now, they used to give us a 5 million figure of jobs, and then when it got tighter, they added just a little weight there. Opportunities, so that then we can't really touch
you,
what
you
this
can
thing
create,
is.
You can't create jobs with the ANC policies. Those are socialist policies that are not designed to create jobs. They are designed to have you as a dependent on grants. That's why they are excelling with grants. So it's logic. And that's why I said in the beginning, the policies that we adopted are logically a job-creating policies. Anywhere in the world you go. If you go left, believe me, you can make any speeches about jobs. Your results are going to tell you where you are going. You are going to be a state-dependent citizen on grants. That's why even hospitals cannot even absorb anybody. We won't go there.
Leaders that know what they are doing. R is redistribution. We are going to make sure that your grants are meaningful. Bakokwane, you cannot go home. Kadi grants is at 1.3. We are going to give you grants that are equal to the national income that is gazetted. 3,000 rand will be the grants for Bakokwane.
Now that you've introduced the issue of grants, what is the average age of people in attendance at your manifesto launch? And I'll tell you where I'm leading to.
Yeah. It was interesting because we had actually a lot of the young people. I think the average was around the 18 to 40, 45. Yeah. That was the average age that we saw.
I swear I would have guessed that they were pensioners because I thought I found the promise of a 3,000 rand pension grant rather dramatic and if not opportunistic. And you are criticizing the ANC for if they're socialists, so they'll have to give people grants. But you are going to increase them even.
We have to, because you know why? The reason that they are giving so low grants, as a peanut, you can't get full, but you are hooked on it. You know, there's nothing else you can do. You just have to keep, like 350, what is that?
Yeah.
If you're going to, we will be giving grants because they are naturally the vulnerable that needs to be assisted. Whether the old age grant that must be increased, the cost of living is too high. You know, they can't afford. But because our policies will be creating jobs and creating surpluses in our national coffers, we are able to now give meaningful grants, not only to increase the old age grants to 3,000 so they can afford the cost of living, etc., but also even caregivers that we spoke about, unemployed single men. Because once you create an economy that is a job-creating economy, income-earning economy, that is what we are looking for, then the most vulnerable, you look after them in the most dignified manner. Right now, the economy is not creating jobs. You don't even have the tax base now because
In fact, your own words, you said this country is broke, Colin. You spoke about our national debt spiraling out of control.
Something trillion of national debt. You fix that.
If I'm going to vote for you now and I'm 70, what's going to come first? Fixing the debt and then I get my 3,000 or 3,000 in the process somehow?
They come simultaneously. Because immediately when we come into office, and I want to get into this, you implement the night economy. You've increased the tax base. More people are at work. 8 shifts a day around the metros especially. So the reason that we are in debt is because our tax base as a country is so little. Out of the population of adults that is eligible to work, only 36% are working. Mm. And out of that 36%, you know, only 12% are paying tax.
Are tax paying, yes.
Are tax paying, yes. So where do you think now you're going to get the money? So we have to increase this 12%. We must flip the statistics, basically. So we have to increase this tax base because that's what you use to pay grants. When the gear started back in 96 or so,
the 96 project, what it was called.
Exactly. The reason they could introduce grants in the manner that they did is because 353 people were working for every 100 grant that we're paying. Right now is the opposite. For every 100 grant that we're paying, only 50 plus people are at work. So that's what I'm saying. It's not rocket science. It's logic. It's people willing to do what works and shifting our mentality from ideologies that have not produced results. Because what we are facing as a country now is an ideology problem that has ran away with the ANC such that they forgot post that Mbeki era. The ideology that was adopted 2008 up until now has really, really put us in serious issues because we've moved away from that gear, and we've moved towards the NDP. And our fight is this ideology that has dragged us to where most of the African countries have gone to. Nothing wrong with grants, and we'll increase them because we'll be creating jobs. Our 5 million people, this is state, I think it's 5.5 million unemployed graduates are at home. They will be back at work.
What else are we going to do? We are going to have a 24-hour economy. Gone are the days when it's 7 o'clock now. Most of you are going home to sleep. You are going home to watch Generations. Those days are going to be over. The economy is going to work 24/7. We are going to create 3 shifts a day, where when you go to work 8 to 5, when you knock off, somebody comes and takes over. That alone is going to create 3 million jobs in the first 5 months of us taking office. The 24-hour economy is coming.
Now that you want it, let's talk about it. I mean, I'll tell you the truth about this 24-hour working day.
Yes.
You know, you got my vote on that one, right? Mm. I mean, I often want to record this podcast on a Saturday evening when I come back from a party. But you know what? The people here are lazy. The producers here, they only want to work Monday to Friday, 8 to 5. So I'm forced to come here during the day to do this. So I'd love the 24-hour. But how is it going to work? Is there an example of how it works elsewhere in the world?
Oh, yeah.
On one hand, it feels like we're going to create sweatshops that people speak badly about that are happening in the Far East. But on the other hand, it sounds like it would, maybe create opportunities. How is it going to work?
Look, you go to, especially now, I can also speak as a premier candidate of Gauteng. You go to the kind of provinces and the metros that we have that we compare ourselves to, the New York, the UK, you go to Japan, Tokyo, you know, Hong Kong, etc. Those are 24-hour economy. And we already have part of a 24-hour economy ourselves because we've got hospitals operating 24 hours, security
the
sector
24 hours.
So what is wrong with other sectors being open to operate 24 hours? We are the economic hub, the recipient of all Africans in the world that are going, especially to Africa. They reach here 8 o'clock in the evening. They can't even go anywhere to experience this country because we are sleeping, right? We are missing such
a... I don't want to be running anything out there at 8 o'clock, but on Sarapo, it's dangerous out there.
And, you know, it's called also a night economy if you do research on it, right?
Yes.
They call it a night economy. And many countries have reported, even in China, reported that the night economy has killed crime almost to a single-digit statistics.
Yeah.
You know why? Because crime happens in a conducive environment. We are a haven for crime because after 8 o'clock, it's dark, things are closed, nobody's moving around. Mm-hmm. You know, the only people moving around is maybe cashiers and waitresses that must go home after you are done with your nightlife, you know, and they must 12, 1 a.m. try to go home, etc. Nurses, doctors who work in shifts who also must try and get home. And they are the most, they are put at the highest risk, basically, because they are alone and they are vulnerable. You see, but when you've got movement, it's light, it's happening, it's things, people are at work, shops are open, etc. Offices are open as well. And it opens people to other business minds as well, so that you're not confined to your own time zone. That means now you must start to think, hey, it means between 12 and 6 a.m., I can actually be trading with some of the countries, with Japan, etc.
Yeah.
Goods are moving all the time, trucks are moving. And those trucks are now in danger because it's dark, they're alone out there. So this can help to combat crime, create 3 shifts, you know, you knock off, somebody comes in.
Keep the petrol stores open, you know, 24 hours.
I mean, yeah.
If you're a Christian party, you probably won't agree with that.
You know what?
Part.
That's the one part that, I don't want to venture into. But the consequences that they will open as well.
So you know, another part that got me, this is, you're getting a second vote from me, right? Is the tax part, right? SMEs, you're going to cut tax to those who earn less than 10 million turnover per annum. I mean, I don't even earn 1 million per annum, by the way. I'm an SME. I'm not even an employee. Mm. They don't want to hire me here. So I'm an
I'll
SME,
talk
right?
to them. When I'm president, I'll make sure.
We're going to deal with taxation. The country cannot prosper as long as 45% of your income, those that are working, they know what I'm talking about. 45% of your income goes to tax every month. You are left with nothing. Other nations that we compare ourselves with, their tax is around 30%, 35% at most. So we are going to cut down the tax. Income tax is going to be reduced to 36%. Corporate tax, companies are paying high taxes. we are going to reduce the corporate tax to 22%. Because the companies that are paying these taxes, they are not able to invest again in their businesses to create jobs. In order to stimulate growth, create jobs, we are going to give tax break to the companies. If you are an SMME, those that are owning businesses, do we have SMMEs? SMMEs, you are not going to pay tax as long as your revenue is 10 million and below. There will be no more taxes for SMMEs.
But again, is this populist? I mean, I worry that you want to cut the very little taxes that keep us alive in this economy. If these guys don't pay tax that are already paying tax, or they pay lesser tax, where are we going to get this money from? I mean,
look, you know, and research helps here as well. Most of the SMMEs, and I was an SMME as well, I know the pain of trying to comply. You've got a revenue of maybe 2 million, 3 million. By the time you finish your compliances, you are paying 200,000 to this accountant, to that, and you know, and it's money that you could have used to create jobs, to pay somebody to grow your business. Number two, most of the SMMEs are not paying anyway. So a whole lot of cost is spent chasing after you. They're hiring lawyers to come to have you comply.
I get letters every week.
Do you understand what I mean? And if we look at things differently, I think it will help us as a country. 10 million and below, we are going to exempt you from tax. But then what can you give the country in return? Can you create jobs? Can you do this, etc.? Deregularization of the labor laws as well. You know, if you are earning 200,000, you know, per annum, how are you going to hire somebody for 3.5? I mean, it's logic. It just won't work. You'll end up hiring foreign nationals. Mm-hmm. Then we're back to the loop of foreign nationals are taking jobs in the townships, in the restaurants, and in the, you know, smaller SMMEs. So this way you are able to say, I'm going to give you this benefit as an SMME, because you are a seed to this country. We see you as a seed to the next big enterprise, and will assist you to grow. But then assist us as well. How many jobs can we create? What can you do? And then we rate you on that.
That will be a form of taxation on itself. If you say to me, I'm exempting you, earning this much, but you know, I need to promise to create 30 jobs that may really cost me the same amount of money I would have paid to tax.
No, you won't be forced to say you're going to create 30 jobs, but you'll be able to tell us, if I'm exempted from tax, this is my business that is earning, especially those that are already established.
Yeah.
You know, those that are coming up may not even be able to tell us that except for on the business plan paper. You should be able to tell us to say, look, if I'm not paying all of these accountants and all of those that are helping me to comply, I could have employed two more people here. Good. Then let's employ the two more people. But because you know why? Those two more people are also taxpayers as well. So the tech space keeps growing through those kind of initiatives.
We are also going to exempt you from labor laws. The basic income that is gazetted that you must pay people 3.5, even if you can't afford. As long as you are below 10 million, you will negotiate with your employees. But the minute you reach 10 million and above, we expect you to comply.
You don't like labor unions much, do you?
No, I think they've really taken this country in a downward spiral. They're controlling the ruling party. And it's not healthy for any country to be dictated to by labor unions. We appreciate them. We know their role and their space, and they're important to protect the rights of workers. But not to dictate on policy, almost run the country. It's a dangerous position that we're in with labor unions.
We are going to again implement prayer in schools. It's about time that we go back to prayer in schools. Our children are killing each other in schools. There are no moral values. We must go back to teaching our children about godly values and prayer in schools.
You seem to speak a lot about, and I heard you in the manifesto, Sarah is for everyone, right? But I was taken aback when I heard you saying you're going to bring back prayer in schools. Are you a Christian party?
Look, we are a party that subscribe to Christian values. Yes, we are a Christian based in terms of our values and our morals party. However, when we talk about bringing God back to school, not just prayer, we're saying bring God back to schools, bring God back to communities as well. And we always say this, the state of our nation in terms of social order is completely in disarray. We've completely lost social order. The command and control of the country is non-existent because we don't have a set of values that bind us as a nation. And we've spoken to also a lot of traditional leaders, you know, that we are dealing with. They complain around that social order, social control, and therefore there's instabilities in their villages mm-hmm. as well. Because young people have misinterpreted democracy as disrespect, as lawlessness, as lack of any morals or values in the name of freedom of speech, or I can do whatever I want. Now, when we talk about bringing God back, Ten Commandments is Ten Commandments in any religion. Do not steal, do not kill, do not destroy your neighbor's property. Mm-hmm. Those things can be taught in schools. Those things can be taught in schools. Unlike what the ANC want to bring, the Bella Bill. I don't know if you've
I heard you say that, and I think, it's what is this Bella Bill?
Because now, why you want to teach children at the age of 5 how to be transgender? Why do you want to sell alcohol in schools? You'll rather have that.
Do they want to sell alcohol in schools?
Yes. Why do you want to teach children? Yes. Go and check the Bella Bill. We've been opposing it. We've been to several of the hearings in and around Gauteng, you know, in the past month. I think around March they were having the hearings. We've been there to oppose it.
Our children will not be taught sex education at school. Our children are going to school to learn math, science, technology, to read and write, things that are going to help them in future. We don't want our children to go to school to be bombarded by things they don't need.
You want to sell alcohol in schools. You want to teach children from the age of 5 on sex education how to
What's
touch
wrong
themselves.
With it? You got me worried about that. No, I thought you have to be. It's such an important thing, right, to teach about.
It's important, but research, you must always, neuroscientists are even going against that. I don't even know who gave ANC advice on this Bella Bill. A child's brain, there's a time where you learn about sex education. It's not at 5 where you learn about how to touch yourself.
Also, it's not completely out of school, but not, you're saying it should not come in early.
Not early.
Oh, you got me worried.
In an early stage like at that, children should be taught development, how to read, to learn, so that they can be able to learn from reading. How to read for comprehension, how to remember, you are developing their brains. And what you teach them at that age, it imprints, it stays, it's the foundation of what they are going to be like. Teach them the concepts of mathematics, the concepts of, you know, the STEM. Those are the things that at an early age, if most of us had had that opportunity, would perhaps have been able to do much greater things in terms of maybe science, technology, innovation, etc. And we have an opportunity with this generation to change the quality of our education. And I don't believe that a school must raise funds through selling alcohol. So, and we are saying, instead of that, school children right now are hooked on drugs, right? You want to bring alcohol to their yard now. Children, we read it every day, are taking guns to shoot their teachers.
You're about
teachers,
to give them guns. Didn't you say you're going to give them guns?
No, anyway. I will give the girls guns and we are going to. But school children are taking these guns to shoot their teachers, right? And it's a huge problem. So the moral values needs to be brought back. And one of the key things that has held any nation together is the spiritual values. You go to Dubai, they don't apologize about being a Muslim country. Mm. You don't question it. You observe it. You may not be able to participate with, you know, what they're doing, but you respect it. You observe their hours and all of that. You're scared because there's order. There's law and order. There's command, control. There's social order. You want people to respect the nation, respect authority, respect the next person. That's what you want. Mm. You go to India. Most of them are Hindus, and even their country, their constitution centers around that. You go to China, there's Buddhism. Mm-hmm. You come here, open, there's nothing. You go to America, even in some of the Western countries, they have their own Christian values as well and what they subscribe to.
Please don't use America. Even Trump spoke as a Christian. I mean, can you believe Trump speaking as a Christian?
In fact, I'm a fan of Trump.
I think this is the end of this conversation.
There are certain aspects that I think you need to take from... You know, when you eat a fish, you eat the flesh and throw away the bone.
Yeah.
And I get flesh where I get it. And there are things that I agree with him. There are things that I don't agree with him. But I think at this stage, he'll make a better president.
Now that you use the fish metaphor, when they say fish rots from the head, there's one fish that's rotten completely from everywhere, and that's Trump. But anyway, let's move on.
Let's move. I mean, I agree with him in terms of energy as well. And that's our energy policy here.
I'm going to get to energy.
Yes, in fact,
that's right now.
Sarah is promising every household, every home, from Giani to Palabura to Rustenburg to Free State, everywhere, Mpumalanga, KZN, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, every home in South Africa must have a solar panel, it must have a borehole. We are tired of being at home without water, without electricity. Solar panel for every home, a borehole for every home.
You know, that's a bachelor, right? Mm. Sometimes I find myself trying to worm myself into a girl's heart, you know, and I promise them all sorts of things. But I would not go as far as promising somebody a solar panel and a borehole in their home. Are we sure we can achieve that?
No, we can. We can achieve that. Solar panels, in fact, even in Gauteng right now, and Joburg in particular, there's a rollout of solar panels in every home. You know why? Because there's private sector and there's ways to fund. It's not going to be coming from government. And if you open your mind, just do a request for information and you know, where people will come up with ideas. We're busy installing them and people will pay for them little by little for the next 5 years or so. You won't even feel it. Even borehole, you know, we can have those boreholes. There are companies that are willing to say, no, let's enter into an agreement. We've got money to invest in this and then we'll recoup our money.
Then the guy who puts in his money or her money on Eskom, we decry the fact that you also put in solar panels because then they're losing out on potential business on the other side.
No, certainly. But, you know, the biggest business of Eskom is not really residential. You know, there's no factory that can run on solar.
Yeah.
Even residential, there are days where, you know, you don't have power, etc. But as an alternative, as backup, etc., it's good to have it. Even the borehole, you know, we have it in our homes, but... to run.
It's not total replacement of the water boards.
Exactly. So we do need that in that nation to be able to get proper investment, get proper social order going. Our children must be able to bath before they go to school, have proper breakfast, you know, warm breakfast. Unlike what we do now, sometimes, you know, just drag them out of bed, wipe them, and they can't even get warm breakfast. They just get something because there's no power, there's no water. You know, what is that? So we need to have those backups.
No, you got me. Until you explained, I was so worried that there she goes dishing out gifts like Santa Claus on cocaine or something.
Yeah.
But somewhere through your talk,
yes,
the sound system started malfunctioning, which disturbed me a bit, and there was no sound. I mean, at that moment, I thought, is the sound man not interested in what you're saying? I'm like, he's not believing me anymore. He switched you off. Like, don't speak again.
No, you know, we had an issue. We needed to switch, I think, at that time, generators, etc., because that place had no power.
Totally. Energy issue.
Yes, because we powered our own self throughout the whole function. There's no power there at all.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And as fast.
Yeah.
You wanted to move from loans to grants.
Yes.
I think I'm not going to ask you whether it's sustainable because you now demonstrated to me that we can make money elsewhere.
Yeah.
But my question is going to be, does that include those who fail or don't complete their studies?
Okay, you got me there because the assumption is that when we give you that, you're going to pass. You know, it's like a scholarship or bursary, you know. Look, for us and for me in particular, having received loan studying, I just feel it is the worst thing for somebody to graduate and the first thing that you're faced with is this huge debt for the next 3 to 5 years of your life. And if you can't pay it, you are listed. I mean, we've been through that where you are now listed and, you know, you need to. And all you wanted to do was an opportunity to get somewhere in life.
Yeah.
Now the very same thing has become a poison for you. I think there's a way where we can have this as a grant.
Yeah.
And we've explored those possibilities through, of course, growing the economy to be able to provide that. We used to have entities. Some of us even got scholarships from Telkom, Bo Anglo, they used to give. But because now they're non-functional in a number of ways, the regulations of BE has crippled them, the power has crippled them. So the CSI budget for most of these entities has really shrunk, such that almost every graduate, and especially the black graduates, and black, I mean, even coloreds and Indians, etc., the only option they have is NSFAS. That should not be.
I should hope those who study biblical studies don't get grants. It must be loans. It's not going to grow the economy.
I you have something against God and prayer.
No.
You know, the one who protects you when you are in an Uber going home late at night.
So in the likely event that you don't end up in the union buildings, would you be open to take over as Speaker of the National Assembly, seeing that there's a vacancy already there and you're experiencing doing that kind of a job?
Yeah, certainly. So I was actually funny. We're talking about it. I said, you know, this vacancy just screams Colleen Makubele. So in a space where we are, where, of course, coalitions are not just a possibility, they're a reality that we're going to be facing. In the highly unlikely event where the coalition partners don't vote me in as the president of the nation, yes, I will take the speaker's position.
I don't know if I'm seeing you at the union buildings, or I'm seeing you somewhere in Gauteng here, or at the National Assembly with the gavel going, order,
yes.
Order.
But I will be somewhere.
Somewhere. Excellent. Thank you very much for
appreciate
coming.
Appreciate this. Had fun. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Taking the Rams by the Horns. Please send your comments to me via email on rams@ramsmabote.com. Let me know what you think of this podcast. Please share your views on whether you are going to put your cross on Sarah or if you are cross with their promises. Download the My Sowetan app and listen to more of my podcasts. We are also on Spotify. Follow us on X at Rams by the Horns and at Sowetan Live. From me, Rams Mabote, goodbye and God bless.